morning. This is the BOE hearing. Today is Thursday, August 8th, 2024. The hearing is for petition E-273-23 and E-274-23 for A1 Kennewick LLC and Southbridge Investments. Parcel numbers 1-3299-3BP-4355-002. Parcel 1-1689-101-3040-004. The Board of Equalization is a quasi-judicial body, which means having to do with powers to make legal decisions consistent with other federal and state boards and commissions. The board and the assessor's office are independent of each other. The role of the board is to review the evidence and testimony provided by both parties and determine the fair market value of the property as of January 1st of the 2023 assessment year for taxes payable 2024. Washington state law presents presumption of correctness to the assessor. The burden is on the appellant to prove their valuation is correct to a legal standard of clear, cogent, and convincing. This hearing is recorded and all testimony is under oath. As clerk of the board, I will now ask you to affirm your testimony by raising your right hand and taking the oath. Do each of you who are testifying today affirm that the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth?
I do so affirm.
I do.
Following this hearing, the board will meet to weigh all the evidence and testimony and make a final determination. A written decision will be issued to you, which you should receive within 4 weeks. The decision is appealable to the State Board of Tax Appeals within 30 days of the date of the decision letter. The board is in receipt of all documentation provided by the appellant and the assessor, and the board has reviewed it. Chair?
Okay, this is a commercial hearing. We allow about an hour for these things. The first 20 minutes, I'd like to hear from you, Mr. Politika. Then we'll hear from the assessor. We'll have some questions back and forth, and then we will adjourn. Because we're doing two of these with the same tax advisor, we're going to kind of roll from one right into the other. And so when we finish with one, we'll just move right into the other. We'll have our board discussion after we close the second hearing. So with that, you may proceed.
Thank you. I'm assuming, yeah, you have the my evidence packet sitting there. Yes. In front. Yes. Of you. Okay.
Yes.
I'll go to the page right before A1-1, just the summary of the property. You know, Spring Hill Suites in Kennewick has 116 rooms. It's considered an upscale class hotel, built in 2015. And you can see there some of the amenities at the property, a business center, meeting space, pool, restaurant, fitness center. And I'll just kind of go through my evidence packet. The next page is just simply our requested value compared to the assessment and our allocations for land and improvement, the total requested value of $12,631,500. To arrive at this value, if you go to the next page, A1-2, we submit an income approach to value. And this summarizes the historical income and expenses from 2018 through 2022. See there, 5-year average, and how we came to our requested value was by capitalizing the 2022 P&L with a few minor changes in there. But you can see there at the bottom, the NOI for each year, you know, in 2018, increasing into 2019 level. And then obviously with COVID, 2020 and 2021 are low, and then you can see with 2022, seems like this property and sort of the hospitality industry has sort of reached back to stabilized levels. And so that's where we figure, rather than what would typically be done is a 3-year average or 4-year, we just look at 2022 and see that it's kind of back to stabilized income, and we capitalize that. The
couple of couple of comments at this point before you go on. At the back of your package, you've included a reprint of the appraisal journal from 1984. And one of the key sentences that you've highlighted says, hotels and motels are almost always valued by an income capitalization approach that takes the property stabilized net income and capitalizes it into an estimate of market value. Key point here is, well, we don't have stabilized value, right? You have 2 years that are anomalous because of COVID. And so you really don't have 5 years of stabilized value. And so that concerns me.
Well, that's why I include the pre-COVID years and 2022, and you can see the income levels have
but it would basically it would almost be better if you just did 18, 19, and 22 and just excluded the anomalous years.
That would and that's
situation.
That could be, you know, that could be looked at. The difference between pre-COVID and post-COVID is, you know, the expenses, you know, not just for this hotel, but the cost of employees, the cost of goods has gone up. And so expenses are a little higher. So kind of including those years, it can skew it with a lower expense than what would be expected, especially looking forward from 2022. So I hear what you're saying. I think what's known or knowable as of 1/1/23 and how a investor may look at this property, they're not going to include, well, they're going to, I think what they do and what we've talked to is what you're seeing is that income levels are back up to pre-COVID, expense levels are a little higher, so your NOI is generally a little lower, but they're still projecting increases in income and continued kind of growth. So I think
as inflation goes up, the rates go up with it.
Exactly. And so I guess, you know, I see what you're saying, and I would, you know, I'm just not sure how that would have been received just excluding 20 and 21.
But I hope you understand that, you know, based on the article you provided, we don't really have stabilized income at this point. So for those 5 years. The other point I wanted to ask you about is your unloaded cap rate. Can you speak to that?
Yeah.
Seems a little high.
Well, if you go to page A1-6, it's a PricewaterhouseCoopers investor survey for full service lodging. And you can see there, the second bold down overall cap rate for these properties ranging from 4.5% to 10% with an average at 8.05%. And those, you can see the average increasing generally over time there from the past few years. And then I've also included from CoStar the submarket report for Yakima, Kennewick area. If you go down to, let's see, it is on page A1-23 is a graph showing the historical trend for this area, and it separates the cap rates by class, luxury and upper upscale and upper mid-scale, which is where the subject would fall, mid-scale economy, and then just cap rate as a whole for the submarket. The following page, I kind of outlined by month these different, what the graph is showing there. And it's, you know, for January 2023, it shows an 8.55% cap rate. And you can see that trend over the past, you know, since interest rates have gone up, 2022 and 2023, that trend increasing for cap rates across the board. The overall cap rate for the submarket is, you know, nearly 9%. And so that's
let me back up. If I go back and look, I mean, I see your 8.55%, but that's as of 24, right? But if I go back to the start, to the end of 23, it's only around 8%.
I'm on A1-24, that page.
Okay, I was looking at 23.
Yeah, the graph is it's the line in front of, you know, the on the graph 20, 21, you know, that's spanning the year, so it would be the very front of that line. But yeah, that's why I include this outline showing January 23, December 22 at 8.5 or just above 8.5. And so kind of reconciling that with the National Investor Survey for full service hotels, which the subject is at the average of 8%, you know, I think supports between that range. And, you know, I landed at 8.5 for this property.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
You know, I'll just touch back on my income approach, just, you know, whether it's fully stabilized or not, you know, I think the levels are back up to pre-COVID and the NOI. I just want to point out that I include, which is not shown in the P&Ls that are provided, I include a 4% for reserves, and I support that with the following two pages, or really the A1-4, the STR report showing that for, you know, what's typical for an upscale class, you know, they show 4.5% reserve for replacement. And then also with the PricewaterhouseCooper survey, on that page where it had the cap rate average of eight at the top right, they're showing a 4% average, that investors would expect on a full service hotel. So, okay. You know, just, you know, I included the entire submarket report. It's a lot, a lot of it is not really pertinent. You know, it does have some occupancy stats, which align with what the subject is back up to, and the RevPAR levels as well. But I'll just point out, you know, the sales graph, the price per room, it's on that
page. Which page are you on?
Yeah, sorry, it's on A123 with that cap rate graph. It just shows what this submarket area has seen, you know, 2020 through has the projection past 23, and that the price per room is in line with our requested value. But I'd also, you know, I'd point out, I included a few sales, and the reason why we rely on the income approach and why I submitted that at the end here, you know, saying that the income approach is the best indication of value, is that specifically in this area, there is very limited comparable sales. You know, I know the assistant, they expanded their search into the sort of the Eastern Washington region, which, you know, I didn't do it. I'm not, probably not, you know, knowledgeable enough to know the different location adjustments for a hotel in Spokane versus Richland and that. And so I just included the sales that were available of, you know, similar age in the Richland Kennewick area. And you can see these sales and their price per room, all except number three, are all, you know, within a general range of each other. And sale number three there on page A1-32, the Wood Springs Suites, is much higher than everything else, with a 185,000. 654 price per room. This sale, when diving a little deeper, was included as a, on the next page you can see, was included in a portfolio purchase. And so that sales price, you know, it's not reliable to know whether or not it's just an allocated amount or if that's specific to that property's market value. You know, generally they purchase a lump sum of these five properties for the established total amount. So it's not necessary. You know, I don't think it can be included as a market sale in this case, and, you know, skews the results of an average if used it that way. So you can see on that next page where it kind of gives some detail on that portfolio sale, and you can see that, the five properties that are included in it, you know, kind of across the region. Let's see, the next page is a map of the sales, the four sales that I included. Moving forward, I've included the 2018 to 2022 P&Ls that align with what was shown on that summary page in my income approach. As you said, you know, I've included the article about the valuation of hotels by Stephen right. Rushmore, and you know, he's kind of the that's what this income approach is essentially based on, is called the Rushmore approach. And that, and you know, and he simply states that, you know, the cost approach and the sales comparison approach are not used by investors or potential buyers, and that they rely on the income approach. Sales comparison approach can be used as a, you know, test of reasonableness, you know, to sort of see if your income approach is in line with it, but you know, different variables and adjustments that would be needed, and between hotel to hotel, that the income approach is the most reliable.
Okay.
At the end of this, at the end of this, okay. I include the properties STR report, which from December of 2022, which is a report that most hotels like this, you know, they subscribe to. And what it does is on page A1-47, it shows on the top right there, performance highlights. It shows how this property is performing compared to a competitive set in the area. And you can see there at the bottom, year-to-date occupancy and average daily rate and RevPAR of the subject property compared to the competitive set. You can see it's outperforming a lot of the hotels. So, you know, I look at this as market data for occupancy and daily rate and RevPAR, and why I thought, rather than adjusting last year's performance, you know, applying the 2022 income and capitalizing it as compared to maybe using some sort of rate and occupancy from the competitive set, because the subject is performing very well. And so on the second to last page here, A1-50, it lists the hotels that are included in that competitive set and their room count. And so, yeah, that's, you know, you can see the subject. Some of them, it's a little newer than a lot of these hotels, but it's performing better. And so that's where, you know, just to sort of end, you know, before I answer any of your questions, that's where, how we supported our income approach and why we think that the assessment is high. And, you know, so we, you know, we come to 12,980,000 from our income approach. And then we deduct the personal property assessment, which, you know, of 348,460, so that it's not a double taxation type of deal. Usually a property sells, the personal property is going to be included on it. And so that's how we get to our concluded value and requested value of 12,631,500, which is 108,892 a room.
Okay. A couple of points here. For us to accept your income data that you have here from the hotels specifically, we would typically need to see audited financials, and these are not audited financials because there's no attestation as to the reasonableness of the information. Secondly, in the state of Washington, we're required to put the sales approach first, followed by the cost approach, and then the income approach is third. So I hear what you're saying about what investors may do, but the state of Washington for taxation purposes has it just the opposite way. So, and that's what we're required to follow, the law of Washington. So at this point, I guess I'd like to hear from the assessor, and then we'll circle back with you, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Chris, are you presenting?
Stephen will be presenting.
Stephen's presenting, okay.
Good morning. So excuse me if I shuffle around. I was just handed this case yesterday. So so we're talking about the Spring Hill. I think it's a Marriott Spring Hill Inn and Suites. Is right next to the convention center, right behind our building. It's also by the arena for the hockey and all that. So it has a lot of business there. So I'm just going to jump into our sales comparison approach is on page 11. We do have a lot of them from out of town, but if you want to just look at the local ones, we do have four. The WoodSpring Suites is an economy class. That's from STR, the global leader in hospitality data. They're considered an economy. We also have the Best Western Motel that's right by Walmart in Kennewick. We put on the Holiday Inn Express, which is on Tapatio, kind of where they just put that new road in and connects it to the mall.
Right.
And then the Comfort Inn, which is, I think it's the one that's right behind the queue, the hotel that they turned into apartments.
Oh, right.
Mm-hmm. I think that's that one. And those are not the same scale. So it's kind of hard to compare it with the number of the price per room, because they're not even the same scale. Spring Hill's considered upscale, and the other ones are like mid and economy, upper mid scale.
Okay, so from that, are you suggesting that the dollar per key would be higher for the subject hotel than what you're showing here?
Yes. Then what? Okay. What for that? Yeah, you would expect it to be more. So, with our
And I see you also have a 23 sale from Spokane. So,
yeah, we have. I'm basically just gonna. I don't. Since I just got this yesterday, I really haven't had time to look at the ones that are out of town. So I'm just gonna basically speak to the ones that are in the area. Okay,
but your average and medians would be impacted by those out of town sales.
That's true. But it is still the greater. I mean, it's Eastern Washington area. So, and like Pasco, I think I may have drove by Roadway Inn once or twice, but I don't know the area that well over there. So if we look at, I understand, but our basic mean and median, we are under, both below $91 under the mean and 110 under the median.
Would you recalculate those values based on your first five sales and also the Holiday Inn Express in Richland? I would like to throw out the Ellensburg and two Spokane sales. The two Spokane sales were both after the start of 2023, and I think they're in a different market than the Tri-Cities. As you saw from the PricewaterhouseCoopers, I think it was, it's considered there's a Yakima Tri-Cities submarket. And Yakima's probably, it's about an hour away. So if you could just recalculate those and exclude the Ellensburg and two Spokane sales.
Okay, Chris is going to work on that.
Okay.
So I was just looking at the Holiday Inn Express here. It's fairly close. It's just down the road from us. As well, and if you look at it, it's upper mid-scale. It's quite a bit older, 2003, and the price per square foot is 178, which is just a little bit over what we have down from the Spring Hill Suites.
Right.
And you can tell there's a difference. I mean, you look at the buildings, and there's a difference. I mean, this one's a much nicer, high-quality hotel than what the Holiday Inn Express, but it's still close. It kind of gives us a good estimate, showing that we're actually a little low, I would say, on this one. We also gave you guys a cost approach, which I think was the page four. Yeah.
Which page was it?
It's the page before, page 10.
10, okay.
We ran a cost approach there. It came out to 20,309,113, which is about 3,700,000 over, more than what we have down. It's 7 million over what the tax rep is saying, so like 7.5 million. Looking at the market and everything, I just took some information from their data that they gave us, and their data says on page 1-9, the trailing 12 months occupancy is 61.2%, the highest they've seen in the past 5 years. Now, we've had this last year, which was sustained, and we didn't raise the rate on this one.
The 23 valuation, the 23 valuation is the same as the 22 valuation. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
And then another section, that, which is still on the same page of theirs, it says, as of May, the 12-month average RevPAR in the Yakima-Kennewick Hotel submarket is firmly in the green and climbing at an annual rate of 6.4%. That is stronger than the 1.1% increase observed in the broader Washington State USA market. So things are better than last year for the industry here. We can't go by the national, anything that's national, because it's just a different ball game here in the Tri-Cities, and it's pretty much always
has.
The inventory, another spot they put down on that same page is the inventory has been smaller over the past 5 years as demolition activity has outpaced new construction. And then it said somewhere in there, I think it was the same page, it said that there was one hotel, I think, in the last 5 years that's in the pipeline to be built. And that one is going to be right over by the Holiday Inn Express. And then other ones have gone off the market in the area. So you have the Days Inn is no longer a hotel in Richland.
Right.
I think was the Quality Inn. That's right next to the Comfort Inn over by the mall. It's turned into the queue now, and that's off the market. The Franklin, which is in Richland by George Washington Way and Van Giesen. There's like a high school there or an elementary school or something.
Right. Yes. Yeah, I think it's elementary, maybe.
The Studio 6 on 4th Avenue by 395, that's also gone off the market. So it clearly shows that it's not like there's a bunch more competition and everything is just going up. So it should be even a better market than last year. On page A1-24, he says he breaks it down per month, which I find just interesting that there's no data. Like all of his pages have the little marks, CoStar or, and that one just completely blank. So I really would like to see the source on that. I don't know.
I think what he's done is he's apparently has access to the chart on the prior page, the data point for the chart. And I think that's where he's getting it from, is from the data points on the prior chart.
We can't see
I know. Understand. I can't either.
I also, noticed on his, income direct capitalization analysis on page A1-2. He includes the FF&E reserve, which I looked it up, and the FF&E reserve stands for furniture, fixtures, equipment, which are movable items and do not participate, are not permanent in the building. And then he also takes personal property off, so he's taking it twice on there.
The furniture FFE is all personal property. I can understand why they would want to reserve it, but for valuation purposes, I'm not sure it counts, as you just said.
So that's kind of where it sits at. Do you have any additional questions or anything?
Yeah, just a second, let me make a note here. Okay. On your hotel double sales. Oh, excuse me. On your page 12. Where it's at the bottom, it says comparable sales reconciliation. And again, this is with all of your sales. And again, I'd like to throw out the three sales I mentioned earlier. So I'd like to get new numbers for that. And I'd also like to get dollars per key, since that's the number he was using. Well, Chris is doing it on his hand calculator. I would just do it on his computer.
I don't have the original format. I would do the same thing. You had mentioned omitting three. Did you want us to continue to include the Yakima one in that as well, which is comp five?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. I would, because I get there's continuing reference to the Yakima Tri-City submarket. So I'll keep the Yakima one in. I think it's close enough to the Tri-Cities market. Spokane is totally different, though.
Sure. One moment.
Then you get into the North Idaho, and yeah, that's a whole totally different market up there.
And the other thing on there, which I don't know what page it's on, they had on their list of sales. They don't make any adjustments to them for time or anything, or quality of building or anything. It's just from the date that they sold, which I think was something more like 2001. And then the market has clearly changed over the last few years. Sorry, I don't have it earmarked what page in his packet so thick.
Right. But generally adjustment is time adjustment too, isn't it?
Yeah, we're just doing a time adjustment on there, but it needs to have some adjustment showing it on there. And to take how old the
building is. Yeah, I would agree, given that you were talking about different quality levels of hotel, right? That some kind of quality adjustment needs to be probably factored into these things. But okay, Chris, you can email us all those numbers after the hearing if you want. So
okay, actually, I just finished up the averages. So the new average for the dollar per square foot would be $278.43. That's excluding comps 6, 7, and 8.
Okay, average dollars per, and that's all still time adjusted. Okay, now it's how much?
278.43.
Okay.
And then the dollar per key, 110.524.
Oh, so that actually came down. Interesting. And what about the median?
I haven't gotten to that point yet. I can email that if you want.
Yeah, that's fine. Yes, that's fine. Okay. Anything further from you guys at this point?
No.
Okay. Mr. Politika, back to you. Any comments?
I mean, I can clarify the, you know, I'm under oath here. I'm not trying to pull a fast one. The data that I'm supplying is from the graph. It's not, you know, so it's, you download it, the data into Excel. It doesn't come with the same, CoStar stamp. I PDF it from Excel, but you know, I'm not manipulating the numbers. And
right.
I'm under oath, and it's legit. That's what the graph shows. That's what the cap rate for that time period, for that submarket report shows. And you know, the deduction for replacement reserves, as well as the deduction for personal property assessment, you know, in this, I'm following the Rushmore method and how the income approach is done on hotels. And so potential buyer was going to come in and buy this hotel, they would begin to make deductions for replacement reserves for FF&E or renovations that would need to be done. And they would build that reserve fund. You know, hotels that are under a franchise are required to keep the property at a certain level and required to periodically, you know, make updates and renovations to the hotel. So that's why in the income approach as an expense, you include a replacement for reserves, you know, a fund for that, for, you know, the planned renovations as well as replacing furniture and equipment, you know, and then deducting the assessment of furniture and equipment from the income approach is to isolate the real estate value. So when these sell, when they, you know, there you include the replacement reserve expense when you're analyzing the NOI, but to right. then isolate, you know, so then we're trying to isolate the real estate value when they sell. Typically, it's not sold completely bare bones. It's going to include furniture and equipment, and they're selling based off the income approach. So to then isolate the real estate value, I'm just deducting simply the assessment of the equipment, furniture and equipment. So that isolates the real estate value. Including that would be double taxation. You know, and then two, I'd also just like to point out, you know, the Washington state law, it's, you know, it says you rely on sales and cost if, you know, it's, but it's also fair market value. And if there's not enough sales to determine a reasonable value with this comparable sales approach, then you can rely on income approach. And the state board, you know, has ruled on this time and time again, especially in hotels, when investors, you know, and buyers are not relying on the sales approach to determine the fair market value. And so that's where, you know, I'd like you to consider it, as in this case, there are not that many comparable sales, and specifically without significant adjustments to lesser quality, or, I mean, we're just not sure, would this hotel sell for significantly more price per room than an economy hotel? The sales, they don't prove that. And so that's why the subject's income is much more reliable. And I think, I'm not sure if there was any other questions about what I submitted. I think those were the two main things. The personal property assessment needs to be deducted, and right. the data that I provided okay. is not manipulated. You know, it's legit, the cap rate support.
Right. Well, I mean, as far as the number of sales, I see we have 7. I mean, that's pretty darn good for this quality of, for this type of property. I think that the number of sales are sufficient as far as this board is concerned. Now there is that issue you raised about the quality, and that's the same topic I mentioned to the assessor earlier. Not sure quite how we get to that, but what the data seems to show is that these lower quality hotels are selling for a higher value per square foot than what your property is assessed at. Now the dollar per key is lower, and I attribute that to the lesser quality hotels don't have as much non-rentable square feet as you guys do. You have more non-rentable square feet, right? For the restaurant, for the lobby areas, the meeting rooms, etc., that these other hotels don't have. So I'm not too bothered by the dollar per key issue. So, okay. Any further comments before we? Okay,
well,
go ahead.
I mean, the price per square foot, in the market, it's not even a, when it comes to hotels, it's not even something that's really considered by appraisers, you know, that are doing fee appraisals or investors. It's just there's too much differences to determine a price per square foot of a property. The price per key is what's used. And then, but just looking at the sales, you know, we're talking about over a $16 million assessment right now. You know, just a $3.8 million, these are different levels of hotel. They're just not comparable. You need to have comparable sales to determine. I don't know what the adjustment would be to go from a $3.8 million sale up to a $16 million potential value. That is way too large of an adjustment to be considered comparable. And so that's when I say there's not enough comparable data here. You have the Courtyard Marriott in Spokane, you know, similar quality of hotels, but they're in different markets. It's, these adjustments are too great, you know, the typical kind of consideration of what makes something comparable is less than 25% or less net adjustment. And these inferior properties would require way more than 25% to get up to 16 million and change. And so that's where the, you know, I respectfully disagree that they just would require way too much adjustments to be considered a comparable property. And it's unknown how much those adjustments would really command if it would support a $16 million plus assessment. So that's all.
Yeah, I'm going to come out here.
Hey, George, we do have the medians now.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
The median price per square foot is $242.16. And the median per key is $104.108.
Okay. So they actually came down. Okay. Interesting.
Still
okay.
Price per square
foot. So press the Mr. Politico was arguing that, you know, there's a quality difference between these hotels and that the value difference is too great for these to be comparable. How do you respond to that?
Address you.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, whichever one he wants to answer, I guess. Yeah.
If you have something prepared, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I'm looking at the different scales of the hotel, the STR, the chain of scales.
Where are you looking at?
On here we have the STR chain of hotel scales.
Is that in your package?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Sorry, I want the one that put it together, so I'm not sure.
I included it in mine where on page, I'm sure it's similar, page A1-4 has the different classes of hotel.
So a lot of these are going to be the upper mid-scale, so that's going to be the next level down. So it's not like you're jumping a huge amount.
Okay, so which scale one do you consider the subject?
The subject is the is upscale, the Spring Hill by Marriott Suites. That's
okay. It's not upper upscale. It's just upscale, right?
It's just upscale. And then the Holiday Inn, the Best Western, let's see. So I guess it is a couple of them jumping. Let me see. Don't see.
Another, you know, point when it comes to some of these price per keys and everything, you know, it's just, there's just so many adjustments when it comes to comparing sales, you know, whether you need to bracket the subject with price per keys or with the number of keys in a hotel, you know, if everything was the same, identical, and one had 50 more keys, you know, then that price per key is going to be lower. If everything's equal and it has 50 less keys than the subject, that price per key is going to be higher. And so there's just, when there's no adjustments for that, to me, it's a less reliable approach, just on an average and median of price per key, considering that too.
Well, the
upper scale, and then upper mid scale will be the next one down, and that's what those are.
Yeah. Okay.
Springs, which is
well. Here's the thing. Under Washington state law, the appellant has the responsibility to prove their valuation to a legal standard of clear, cogent, and convincing. The assessor is given the presumption of correctness. So at this point, the board will have to decide whether your valuation rises to the level of clear, cogent, and convincing. It's not really our job to beat up the assessor. It's our job to understand whether your evidence overrides their evidence. And that's something the board will have to discuss.
Okay. Yeah, okay, I think that the sales included that I included, when you exclude the WoodSpring Suites, the portfolio sale, you know, they support a lower price per key than the assessment, and they're more comparable properties, or they're the most comparable, I guess I would say. And then I think the income approach is, you know, sufficient enough to show that this property would not sell for what the assessment is if it were to go on market.
Okay, I think we understand that position. So with that, let's move to the second property.
George, if I could ask one question before we go.
Yeah, go ahead, Peter.
So do we have a occupancy percentage, and in particular closer to the January 1st, 23? Do we have an actual occupancy percentage
for the subject property?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the year end, 2022 shows, you know, 60.5% occupied for the year, and then at the end of my packet where I included that STR report that has the competitive set, it shows you know, that report's from December 2022, and that shows the year end, the 3 month, and it shows the, you know, the current occupancy. And obviously in December at this hotel, I don't think that's the height of you know, of hotels there. And so that's only at, you know, 33.8% for the subject in December, competitive set slightly higher. But, you know, a December, using the pinpoint, you know, December 31 or January 1, that's going to artificially bring down everything. Sure. For, you know, this location for hotels. So, yeah, using the whole year would certainly be
you're
better.
You're right. The whole year is the way to go. So the 60.5 is okay.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
How does that rate compare nationally? Is that a high rate? It seems like a low rate to me, but is that a?
I've always thought 60 was about the average, but that's, you know, for a break even. But anyway,
okay. Well, on the PricewaterhouseCooper snippet that I submitted, you know, it does show a break even on that, where, you know, on page A1-6, where it has the reserves, and it shows a break even at 47.5 for, I mean, and this is segmented into full service only. So for that's the break even for full service, and it shows the occupancy range from 30% to 60%. So, you know, it varies a lot, but I would say 60% is, it just all depends. You know, your occupancy can go up if you bring your price per room down, and your occupancy goes down, but you're charging more on an average daily rate. So it's about, you know, they try to find that balance.
Anything else, Peter?
No, that's great. Thank you very much.
Okay. Let's move to your second petition, which is for Southridge Investments LLC, Comfort Suites.
Okay. Just start whenever you
live very close to that one.
So this one, I mean, a very similar layout in my evidence and how it's in a lot of similar, you know, it provided very similar support. And so, you know, I'll go through it quickly and briefly.
Before you do that, though, I have sort of the same problem. This is a newer hotel, and you have less than 3 years worth of data, right? So I'm hard pressed to see again when we get back to a stabilized revenue how you can consider this approach to be based on stabilized revenue. You have 2 years that are impacted by COVID, and you really only have 1 year that's that, and we don't know if it's still going up or going down. We don't know. I mean, I think the income approach is totally wrong for this one. In fact, it's new enough that probably the cost approach would be the best approach. But,
you know, I disagree. It's just because, you know, I know there's the state statutes, but, you know, an appraiser, the cost approach is just when you're determining the market value of a property is, you know, really looked at only as a test of reasonableness, but to conclude based on the construction costs from 2019, 2018, you know, completing in 2020 to conclude a January 1, 2023 value is just very difficult and unreliable without a lot of, you know, specific knowledge to how costs have gone up or down or for all different types for a specific location. And so it becomes, you know, just using a Marshall and Swift or something, they can be, you know, a good test of reasonableness, but, you know, as the appraiser in me would find it very hard to just rely on that as a, you know, to say that's what I think the value should be. And I agree that, you know, using, you know, this hotel opened, you know, in 2020 and has, but I think that the market in general has stabilized for hotels is sort of the general sentiment. And so I think looking at the, you know, 2022 year and how it performed, you know, I guess I could have done a 3-year projection and brought a present value back down. I guess would be probably if you were to get a fee appraisal for a bank is probably how they would look at it is do some type of discounted cash flow on this as to stabilize, to get a true stabilized income stream. So in that sense, I can agree. I just don't think that, you know, typically that would be accepted here at the local level. But anyway, I think that the sales that provide, so the income approach is how I concluded my value of, you know, and it comes to $125,289 a room. I think that the sales, they also support that when you exclude that portfolio sale. So, you know, I won't spend too much time. It's a similar income capitalization approach where you can see I capitalize it with an 8.5% cap rate again. And I load the cap rate and you know, add the taxes back in as an expense. I use similar analytics for my reserve replacement, except this hotel falls more under the upper mid-scale class. And so I, on the A1-4 is the STR survey for that. You know, I include just another segment of that PricewaterhouseCoopers. This one's for the limited service mid-scale economy segment I include. And then I also include I include all of them actually in this one, just because this hotel being it's like a select service, not upscale, it kind of doesn't fit perfectly into any of these. So I include, you know, each of the segments just to show that the reserves, you know, for each of these and the occupancy and cap rate average for each of these, I think, and then, you know, end up relying on the same submarket report for an 8.5% cap rate. I submitted the same four sales that, you know, if you look at them, I'm asking for just over $125,000 a room. We have, you know, one sale at 90, you know, you could time adjust it up slightly. Sure. You know, I think as cap rates have also increased, so I don't, you know, it's not going to be a huge market adjustment on these, but you're at 97,500 and change per room, 132 and change per room. And then you have the portfolio sale well above everything else. And then the Comfort Inn at 86,000. So I think 125,000 is sort of bracketed and supported by that. And then I also, you know, include each P&L, the same Rushmore publication on the income approach being what's typically most relied on. And then I also include the FTR report for this hotel, where you can see a similar thing where the subject properties last 12 months occupancy and compared to its competitive set and ADR, compared to the competitive set, you know, occupancy a little better, ADR slightly worse. And so I think that supports that the subject's income in the market with hotels that, you know, have been opened longer they're all very similar and what I would consider, you know, a stabilized stream for 2022. And so with that, that's the end of it. Just, you know, the whole STR report, which shows the entire 2022 year by month. And so, yeah, with that, you know, I think that the income stream is, you know, would be considered stabilized by a potential buyer, and they would look at that, and I think capitalizing that is the best indication of value. And we ask the board to make that adjustment for us.
Okay. Assessor, could we hear your, before you guys get started, can you guys speak to this cap rate? He's using an 8.5% cap rate. Can you speak to that? Is that reasonable?
I just got this yesterday. I don't know if I can really comment.
Yeah, I see this is one of Brad's packages here.
Yeah, I just got this yesterday, so I can't really, I haven't done enough research to be able to answer that one. But I did want to address one thing before we go any further, though. Are you saying that you're a certified general appraiser? You said that as an appraiser. So are you a certified general in the state of Washington?
I'm a... not in the state of Washington. No, my background is I'm a licensed appraiser in Utah and Idaho. And, you know, I worked for Salt Lake County for several years and, you know, got, you know, certified in the commercial department there for ad valorem purposes. And since I, you know, then I,
you know, so, you know,
moved
you
away from there in 2020.
That you're an appraiser. When we're talking to sort of, we're talking about commercial enterprises. You can't be saying that you're an appraiser for this kind of stuff.
No, I didn't say I was presenting an appraisal, but
you said
I can
that you are. Anyways, we'll just move on. I just wanted to.
I'll address it. I can. You're mistaken. You know, I understand USPAP. I'm not submitting an appraisal under USPAP, and I am an appraiser.
And the area is in, what'd you say? You're in Phoenix, right? So it's a much different market than Phoenix.
I'm not. Listen, I mean, I get it. I'm an appraiser, and I understand the market. I'm not acting as an appraiser. I'm acting as an advocate for the owner of the property, and I'm submitting evidence for a reduced value.
As a license,
there's,
not a...
Service. I'm not...
I just want to make that clear, that you're not trained in doing this in this area, and you're not, you don't have the license to be doing that. So you're just acting as a representative, not as an appraiser.
100%. Yeah, I would be.
I
can't act it as an appraiser and an advocate, but I'm very well trained in the commercial real estate market. I've been doing it for 10 years. So I fully understand the
right. You said Utah, or is it Phoenix?
No, I said I'm from Utah, and that's where I started my real estate career. We're muddying the waters. I've been working in Eastern Washington.
Well, it's a huge
Northern
difference.
Idaho.
Eastern Washington. Where were you?
Well, I'm working as a tax representative, so I'm all over working in Seattle, Eastern Washington, Spokane.
So you haven't been in Eastern Washington.
I have been in Eastern Washington, yes.
You've been here?
I just
been working on stuff here. That's interesting.
I mean, I don't, you know, I don't know what what that matters about.
It does. It very much matters. Do you know the area?
Okay.
Knowing the area,
yes.
Knowing things that's very important for USPAP.
I'm not operating under USPAP.
But you were
so
saying that you are an appraiser and you're acting.
Yes,
as
I am an appraiser.
So that
I did not say I was acting as an appraiser.
But you're not an appraiser for this area. You have to have a special license in Washington.
I understand how that works.
I believe the gentleman said he's acting as an advocate, not an appraiser. So
move on from that point. As an appraiser or this and that. I just want to make it very clear that he's not an appraiser and licensed in this area. Okay, so moving on.
Okay, understood.
So I'm just going to jump just like I did before. Jump down. Our sales are here. They're all local on our page 6. We have some from Richland, Kennewick, Pasco, Richland, and Kennewick. Again, this one is going to be an upper mid-scale, so it's going to be the same as what most of our other ones here are. The Comfort Inn is also upper mid-scale. The Holiday Inn Express is upper mid-scale, and so is the Best Western Plus. So when we do that, we're looking at the mean and median, so we don't have to throw a bunch out because of the location. It comes to the average, the mean is going to be 277.01, and the median is going to be 238.21.
Now, all you've done here again is time-adjusted sales, is that correct?
Just time-adjusted sales, yes.
Because I noticed you have two or three of your sales are of average quality. Or grade. I'm not sure if it's quality or construction quality. Or.
Yes, average. Three are average and two are good. Yes.
Right, and the subject is good.
Yes.
Is that, you said grade, is that quality or is it construction class?
The class is class D for all of them. They're all going to be wood, basically.
Okay.
Wood or steel framed.
So grade is quality then?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so this is more of an apples-to-apples comparison,
yeah,
right?
So I look at the Best Western Plus because it's just down the road. It's older. It's older hotel. It's got a 234.26 per square foot. I think that's probably the best one. I'm not in his. I think he had a different one as his number one sell. But to me, it's right across the street. It's a smaller. It's a smaller one, but it's right there, right by Walmart. And we're below that. This one's newer. The subject is newer. They're both good quality. I think that's the best example for it. We also provided the income or the cost approach. And that's on the previous page, page 5. It's listed there. It came up to $16,268,977, which is $2,885,000 more than what we have down. And I think it's like a little over $4 million more than what the tax rep has.
Okay.
It's kind of the same story as the last one, the area. I mean, everything's, I'm not going to reread the same stuff that I put down before.
Okay, no, that's fine.
And they did the same thing with the FF and E as well.
Right, so. I understand. Quick comment. He points to the 1370 tap keel, which missed my page there, which is your number one, the Wood Spring Suites, which he claims is part of a portfolio deal. And so how do you, what's your opinion as to whether that price is actually the sale price or an allocated price?
Well, I would say, fine, knock $100 off. It's still going to be more than what we have. $100 a square foot, that's a pretty big knock.
But in your experience, when you see portfolio sales, do the owners typically try to value each property separately and apply that as their sales value, or do they tend to allocate it on some unknown basis?
Well, they're not going to pay, they're not going to go less than what it's worth. I mean, if you're going to sell your property, you're not going to lose money. So I don't see.
Right. This is from the buyer standpoint. This is a buyer. When the buyer buys a portfolio of properties, are they buying, and then they claim that when they put on their real property, you know, affidavit for sale, they put a value there. Is that value based on what they believe that individual property is worth, or is it some kind of an allocation? I mean, what have you seen in the past?
My problem is I don't have any evidence that it is a portfolio sale. He has it down on his CoStar, which we all know CoStar in this area is wrong all the time. We did one last year where they put up a Pizza Hut and called it a mini lube place. So
yeah, I don't
have anything that says it's a portfolio sale. There's nothing in our data packet that shows it.
Well, there isn't his.
Obviously. And his, it's just something from CoStar, which it's take it as a grain of salt. I mean, maybe there is. I don't know. Like I said, I was given this yesterday, so I hate to jump and start making a bunch of
right
guesses on things that I don't know.
Okay.
So just for informational purposes, if you were to omit the Wood Springs for whatever reason, you're still going to come up with a time-adjusted average of $253.31 a square foot.
Okay, let me get that. So that's without Wood Spring.
Yeah.
And it's an average of what?
$253.31.
Okay. And that's still above your assessed value. Okay. All right. Anything further?
I was going to mention like some of these, his comps, like I said, there's no time adjustment. A lot of them are much older. I think his comp 4 was 1994. And the subject was 2018. So
which page are you on?
Where his comps are, I don't. My packet that they gave that we have is somehow is intermixed with another packet, so I don't have the exact page numbers. But where he gives his comps,
well, his comps are the same as your comps.
Yeah. So he doesn't make any adjustments for them. I mean, he's not. We made the time adjustment, yes, but there's some other things that are on there that,
right.
But here's the thing, I guess that's.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for you to ding him for not making those adjustments if you haven't made those adjustments yourself.
Yes, and it wasn't made. Okay, that's fine. You're right.
Okay. Anything further?
No.
Okay, Mr. Politica. Comment?
Yeah, I would just, you know, I'd like to point out that on this evidence packet, it's curious that on page six, you know, there is no price per key for this analysis for this hotel. Kind of wonder if maybe that price per key maybe supports a reduction. The price per square foot, you know, a hotel, it just does not sell or analyze in the market on a price per square foot whatsoever. It's not considered. So, you know, it's whether, you know, the lease, these sales time adjusted price per square foot support the subject, the price per square foot is to me really, it's irrelevant. You know, the price per key would is a metric that's used. And so, you know, the Wood Springs Suites, and, you know, again, I'm under oath, best of my knowledge, and why I would submit it and say it's a portfolio sale is because my research, and yeah, CoStar has some errors, but my research shows that it was in a portfolio sale. And, you know, the sales prices, in my experience, are typically allocated in a sometimes just an even across the board way, a price per room across the total portfolio. There's different ways to do it. Savvy investors will understand that some places it might be better to put a higher price than a lower price. So it's been, you know, I didn't supply it. It's been ruled on at the BTA that portfolio sales, you know, typically without a ton of research into them, should not be considered as a
right. And you know, he threw that sale. Out. He did throw that out. Yeah,
I know. And if I were to, you know, pull up the price per key, average and median on these sales, on this one, throwing that one out, it's that one is the highest one at 158,787. And so that would bring the price per, you know, the subject is currently assessed at 142,380 per key. And so it's up there very high compared to what the sales in the market kind of show. And so that's, you know, I just want to point out that it's curious to me as into why it was included in the other analysis and not in this analysis.
Well, let me circle back to that. You said the price per key for the subject based on assessed value is how much?
I believe, let me make sure my assessed value I was looking at was correct.
13,383,660.
Yep. And with 94 rooms, that's 142,379.
Okay. Assessors, can you do a price per key on your sales? Exclude the Wood Springs. It should be all the same data from the prior package.
Yeah, but we already have the price per key, so we can just throw them together. I think they're pretty much the same. It's just that they're different. Okay, so we're throwing out Wood Springs, right?
So 4,000 was 27.
So 27, this is 145,522. Place, which is 75,048.
Okay.
And then runway 65,289.
Okay.
Express 104,108.
Okay.
And then Comfort Inn is 98,26.
Okay. So.
Okay, it looks like it's 95,158.
Okay, that's quite a bit under what you're pricing the subject at in price per key basis. How do you respond to that?
We don't put a lot of weight per price per key, no. We do things by per square foot.
So, you know, if we're not putting weight into price per key in the appraisal methodology that we use, then it's,
yeah.
I mean, it would be like vending machines per floor. You know, it's just not something that we look at.
Okay.
I guess I would just ask in that sense, do you think that a potential buyer of a hotel is worried if it has 30,000 square feet, 35,000 square feet, or if they're going to look at how many rooms are in the hotel, which, you know, and what that room count is and how many rooms they can rent?
Well, we're going to be,
that is the revenue source, yeah.
But we're going to be reactive by nature in what we do, as and so doing that by looking at, you know, sales and cost approach for Washington State statute.
Okay. Well, I think we understand those two points. So, anything further, Mr. Politika?
No, I don't think so. Just, you know, once again, I'd like just the board to really give some consideration as to the income approach when there is not a sufficient amount of truly comparable sales and tend to rely on that. You know, I know there are some sales and their comparability is maybe in the question, and that's where I think the income approach does become the dominant driver in how these both properties should be valued. And so that's really it for me.
Okay, thank you. Anything further from the assessors?
No, we're good.
We're good.
Okay. Peter, any questions?
So just to be clear, from a high level, the assessor's valuing the property at roughly $13.4 million and the appellant at about $12 million. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So roughly about a $1.4 million difference. All right, thank you.
Anything further? Peter?
Not from me. Thanks, George.
Okay. Marisol, let's go ahead and close the hearings and we will.